bracket's not perfect, everybody. It's gonna be bad. This is Dave of the perfect bracket on Tuesday, April 17th of the Biscuits Calling a Hockey Podcast, and the Kings are gonna screw me, Sean. They're gonna screw me pretty good.
This is Sean up in Ottawa, and I read Dave's article about the Washington Capitals, and I bet everything I owned that the Washington Capitals were gonna win the Stanley Cup.
Those freaking Capitals, man.
I haven't checked that series. I have a T-bone, so don't spoil it for me, but
you know what's annoying is like the King, like I'm not mad that I picked the Caps because both games are up 2-0. They both go to overtime and they're down 2-0. But like I'm mad that I took the Kings, even though all three games have been close, but they've been close the way like a US women's Olympic team game would be if they played Slovenia and it was like 2-1 after two, but the shots were like 75-6. It's like, ooh, what could happen in the third period? Who knows? And then every time in the third period, the women, U.S. women blow them away. That's like Vegas. Every game is as the game goes on. Why did I pick the Kings, man? Why'd you let me do it? You heard me do it. You could have talked me out of it.
Picked them for the same reason. We were picking a wild card.
Oh, you took them too?
Number one.
Oh, I thought
yeah,
you,
t- I had them
oh, I thought yeah, you had Vegas. We're both idiots. That's good.
Yeah.
Well, screw that series. Well, we're done with that series. We don't want to talk about LA and Vegas. It's stupid and
well,
bad.
But we gotta talk a little bit about maybe not the series, but we do have to talk about Drew Doughty because this is like, I feel like this series has been like Drew Doughty's heel turn where it's been building for a few years now, and now he's just fully embraced the dark side. Got himself suspended. Ripped on the suspension for a couple of days and then came back and was like playing, I don't know, depending on your perspective in game three, he was either, you know, kind of playing on an edge or playing out of control or whatever it was. But what are your thoughts on that? First of all, what are your thoughts on the suspension?
Well, it's weird because I just don't know what they do sometimes with suspensions, because that was one of those ones where they would in the past look for the reason not to do it. And he for sure catches shoulder before he catches head. So it's not as though he picked the head. Like last night, Monday night, like this was an accident. Like Sergachev shouldn't be suspended, but like he gets Blake Coleman's head as he's going by. And I know from the one angle, it looks like Blake Coleman's like the worst actor of all time. But then you see it from like the reverse angle where Sergachev's coming at him and like he clearly gets him in the head. And that's not going to be a suspension, but like that to me is the one you want to suspend, is when a guy's coming and hits a guy in the head, like say for instance Ryan Johansson did to Tyson Barrie and didn't get anything. So like I'm okay with them suspending that hit for sure, but it's just again the problem with player safety is just consistency. And like if you're going to suspend Doughty one day and then the next day announce that you're not going to suspend Ryan Johansson, like what happened to those videos they would put out where they would show you why guys weren't suspended? That was the perfect time to do it.
I was thinking about that today because I was thinking about how great those were. Like that was really, and we've said before, like I think the Department of Player Safety videos are some of the very best things that this league does, because like even the Doughty one, I mean, you mentioned like there a lot of people have pointed it out. They say, no, he got shoulder. The first point of contact was shoulder, and that video does a great job of breaking down that no, that's not the rule. The rule isn't the first point of contact. The rule is the main point of contact, and here's how they determine that the head was the main point of contact and not the shoulder. And you watch that video, and you know if you're a Kings fan, you probably don't come away happy, but at least you feel like okay, I get the logic that goes into this. But then they don't do it for the plays where there is no suspension or where there is no hearing. And yeah. I think the reason for that is they just don't want to open up that can of worms, because then that just gives you another level for people to complain about. Now you've got people out there going, oh, well, they did a video explaining why Ryan Johansson didn't get suspended, but they didn't do one for Tom Wilson. So Tom Wilson's okay. And it's just like,
well, they should do it for all of them. That's the point.
Yeah. They do it. Then they end up doing,
there's 16 teams left. 10, there's time.
10 videos a day.
Yeah, oh, no. Like in the regular season, I can see how that can be hard where there's, you know, so many games. But I mean, there's three games a night. Like, cut a video, man. Like, I don't know how long it takes to cut the video when they do that. But I mean,
then you're going to have, you know, you're going to have teams comply with, why'd you even do a video on our guy? He didn't do anything. There shouldn't even have been an issue. And plus, you know, Lord knows they're going to take, if they say anything in one video that seems like it could apply to a play where a guy does get suspended. So you know what?
You don't
they should.
Boxed,
I wish they did, but I can kind of get why there's probably people in that office going like, guys, we don't need this headache. I hope they do what they've done in the past, where sometimes heading into the next season, they'll put a package together and be like, just to remind everyone,
yeah,
here's how it works. And they'll show you some of those ones and go, here's why this one was a suspension, here's why this one wasn't. But yeah, no, I'm with you. I wish they did a better job explaining, but I kind of get why they didn't.
Because like, I know they leaked a little something to Wish, Greg Wyshynski of ESPN, and they explained it somehow had something to do with like the head whipping back or something. And like, that doesn't explain it to me, man. Like, if you're going to like leak it to somebody, just
on which, on the Doughty?
It was why Ryan Johansson wasn't suspended. It had something to do with, like, I get it. Like, the Barry Johansson collision is a little bit more of a sort of like two guys gliding into each other. But I mean, it's still the same hit, basically. Mm-hmm. And I need more than just like, oh, Tyson Barry's head didn't snap back the way Carrier's head did. Like, okay, well, maybe Tyson Barry has a super strong neck. Like, what's the difference? I don't know.
Yeah. And you know what? Like, I know player safety is, you know, the big dumping ground, and we all love to complain. I think you're the same. I've talked to these guys. So you run into them if you're doing a playoff game. Sometimes you run into these guys in the press box, and you're like, hey, what was the deal with this or that? And they'll give you a 30-second explanation, and you're like, all right, you know what? Maybe I can kind of see it. I don't agree, but something I didn't see. You don't necessarily agree. Maybe you do. Maybe you don't. But you know, there is a lot more thought and distinction that goes into this stuff than people realize. And yeah, I'm with you. I wish there was a better way for them to share that with the audience in a way that it wouldn't end the complaining, obviously, but you know, I think it might hold the group in a better light if there was a way that they could do that without just creating more problems for themselves.
You can't stop us from complaining. You just can't. We'll find a way. Like, we're the Gretzky and Lemieux of complaining. Like, we will figure out an angle. Like,
it's tough. It's tough to complain this time of year. This is when the complaining gets tough, but the good ones find a way.
It gets harder, but you know, you just have to push through. You just have to.
My compete level when it comes to complaining about this league is off the charts.
You know what I love? I love how pretty much all year we had maybe like twice every 3 weeks a thing we talk about happen immediately after or before we post the podcast. By the way, the Heidi Klum thing didn't work out. I hung out at that bar for like 9 hours. She never walked in. So I think the power's gone based on that. And the fact that you said you were super pumped to see Nazem Kadri play 7 games against the Boston Bruins, and you might only get one. Congratulations on that.
Well, we're going to get two at least. We know that now.
Oh, right, because it's 3 games. Yeah, you're right. You're going to get 5.
See, what people don't know is I was counting the 4 games during the regular season when I said that. Yeah, let's do that. The other suspension.
The big suspension in the really good series that's been going. Well, it's not a really good. That's another thing, too, is I feel like this has been a really crappy first round. There's been so many blowouts. Like, there hasn't been a lot of competitive games. Like, yeah. Like, I remember last year, I feel like there was like at this point we were like halfway to 20 when it came to overtimes. And now this year, like every game is like 4-1 going to the third. But the first 2 games were bad. First 2 games were kind of lopsided. And then Toronto was like, hey, what's up? We're going to play Thomas Plekanec a little bit more, and we're going to win a game, because that's the key to winning, is laying up two soft goals and then beating the Bruins. That's how you do it.
And they shut down the top line. And what was it? I think somebody tweeted today that said that like that Bergeron line did not allow a single 5-on-5 goal for like the first half of the entire season, and the Leafs got 2 on them last night, which is both impressive and probably not something you want to bank on happening. I don't know, like as a Leafs fan, I mean, you take the win, obviously. It was a must win. You don't really care how you get it, but it wasn't the kind of win that kind of makes you want to flip your whole perception of the series. It's not like, you know, and the other thing about that game last night is, you know, I don't want to be watch the games guy, but this is one of those cases where like, if you just looked at the box score of that game, you'd be sitting there going like, well, wow, Bruins had 42 shots, 40 saves for Frederik Andersen. Big rebound game. Great game by Frederik. In fact, even if you watched just the highlights, right, and you saw a couple of the saves, especially late, you'd be like, man, fantastic. If Frederik Andersen is back. Frederik Andersen looked so shaky.
It was incredible.
Last night.
He was so
for
bad.
The first 55 minutes. Like, I've never seen a shakier 40 save, two goal performance. Like, he would be making saves, and then he would do that thing where the goalie, like, freezes because he thinks the puck has gone in, and there's that fraction of a second, and then it's like, oh, wait, play's still going on. I better get back into it. Like, that happened, like, three or four or five times, the game. Rebounds were all over. There was, you know, a couple of posts. There was one where he made a glove save, and the puck, like, went into his glove and then out of his glove somehow and behind him and hit the crossbar. Like,
yeah.
This was not the Frederik Andersen.
Nope.
Like it
doesn't instill confidence, like, in game four.
No, well, I mean, there's two ways you look at it, right? If you're a Bruins fan, you're looking at it going, you know, even on a night where he made 40 saves, he didn't look all that good. We've had the better goaltending. We're leading the series. Our goaltending's better. Their guy looks shaky. We're going to be fine. If you're a Leafs fan and you're looking for optimism, I guess the way you spin it is you say, this guy, he's been hot and cold all year. He is the sort of goalie who every now and then will steal a game for you. You probably figure he's going to steal one game per playoff series. We just banked a win last night without him having that game. So, you know, maybe maybe we still get it. Maybe we get it next time or back in Boston or something like that. But yeah, it's just one of those where I know, like, you know, it's playoff time. Nobody can watch all the games. And it's the kind of thing where if you didn't watch that one and you're just looking at the box score, you'd be like, hey, Freddie's back. And I was nervous that entire game every time the Bruins took a shot, because it looked like he was fighting it all night long.
And I think that's such a hard thing to judge. I think that's a thing that's easier to judge on TV than it is from the bench if you're a coach, because, like, you know, you don't want to become like a body language expert. You don't want to become one of those guys. Like, there's nothing more annoying to me than watching a hockey game and hearing, like, Pierre Maguire go on and on about how a goalie looks calm. Does any goalie not look calm? Like, who's the goalie that looks spastic? Never once have I heard a guy say, man, he's made 14 saves and 14 shots, but he looks completely out of his mind. Like, everyone's always calm. But, like, if you watch Brian Elliott in the Philly-Pittsburgh series, even the game he won, like, he's constantly, like, he's, like, swimming around the net. He's deep in his net. Like, he's doing the same thing Freddie is, where he's kind of having pucks hit him, and then he's just like, where is it? Oh, it's in the corner. Okay, fine. And it's different for those two teams. Like, Philly has Mrazek, so he's kind of the same as Elliott. So I understand why you'd want to go there. And Freddie was kind of like a Vezina guy for a while, so you don't want to necessarily turn it over to McElhinney after two bad goals. But I just wish, you know, if you're an underdog like Philly is, and you know it's going to be hard to beat Pittsburgh, you have to, especially in game one. Like, game one, he should have been out of there after the second goal. Like, I know the third goal, Malkin, backhand, breakaway, looked good. That was a bad goal. He should have had that one too. And you can't give away games if you're the underdog. And I just felt like the whole Brian Elliott's battling for his stuff was just, you know, I'm not a Hextall fan, but I just, you can't give away a game. And not that they would have come back to win game one down 2-0 anyway, but I just wish more teams were more proactive about taking out their goalies the way, like, baseball managers are in the postseason, when, you know, you get five outs into a game and your guy doesn't have it, and you're like, bullpen for seven innings. Like, you can do that in hockey. You can put in
your
backup.
Is we haven't built up this idea that if you take a pitcher out in the third inning that like crushes his confidence.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, so, like in baseball, if you take out it could be your number one starter, your number five starter. After the game, the guy's like, yeah, I didn't have it. So, you know, great job by the bullpen getting me back. They know the deal. Like a goalie, oh, he took me out after two goals on four shots. Why doesn't he trust me? Oh, shut up. You stunk. That's why.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's my goalie screen.
That series, I mean, Pittsburgh's been the best team.
Oh, yeah.
Far and away in that series. I'm not.
All those games have been bad, too. They've all been blowouts one way or the other.
They haven't been in their first round. I don't know. We were too spoiled. We were too excited from the 2012 series that we were going to get something similar. But I mean, you mentioned Hextall. It's crazy to me. Like, I've never seen. I won't say I've never seen, but I don't think there's a situation in the league right now where it feels like there's a bigger disconnect between the perception of a coach outside of a fan base and within the fan base. Like, remember earlier in the year, we were talking about how it felt like Detroit fans had turned on Ken Holland, but the rest of us hadn't caught up with that.
Yeah.
And the rest of us still thought Ken Holland was this,
well, not us, but
sure thing. Not us. You know, of course, not us. But, and like Dave Haxel, I've written a couple of times where I was like, yeah, I'm running. I mean, they lost 10 in a row and everybody was thinking this guy's going to get fired. And Ron Hexel was like, no, I'm not firing my coach. And they turned it around. He got him back in the playoffs. And wasn't that a great, and every time I write like good job by Ron Hextall, not firing the coach when everybody thought he was going to, Flyer fans are just all over me. They're like, no, Flyer fans don't like this guy. They don't like the way he deploys the roster. They don't like the ice time. They don't seem to like very much about the guy. So I don't know. Ron Hextall does seem to like him. So I don't think we're getting
that's all that matters, right?
Getting a big change. But let's just quickly go back to the Toronto Boston series, just because on a couple of things. The first of all, we sort of skipped over the Kadri suspension. I take it you were good with.
Yeah, despite the fact that I saw like this crazy conspiracy theory going around that he
well, it was one guy on Twitter like did the stupid freeze frame thing and drew arrows and that, and then, which I hate, because first of all, if you're freeze framing anything, you're losing. But then it's like, as soon as you saw that, you're like, oh great, now like this one guy is gonna become like, did you hear that Leaf fans think that? No, I think
it was a girl, actually. I don't think it was a guy. I think it was a girl. Like, usually it is the guy who has the dumb sports theory. Wow. Just like idiot. But I'm not sure, actually. I don't want to gender anyone.
Good to see the ladies catching up with the guys on Twitter for their
it doesn't matter how you identify. You can be an idiot sports fan like everybody else. It's great.
There you are. Yeah. No, I mean, it was a stupid hit that could have been far worse in terms of the outcome and the injury. And like, I know you watch it from one angle, it looks like he's trying to murder him. You watch from another angle and he kind of hits more of the glass, but like, you don't get, like, you don't get a cookie for not having the absolute worst case scenario, like you scenario play out on a hit that didn't have to be made. And like, I thought it was going to be one or two games.
Yeah, I thought two games.
But this is the kind of thing, like we say this, it seems like we say this pretty often with when it comes to suspensions, is you see one come in that's a little harsher than you thought and you go, oh, okay, well, that's more than I thought. But if this is how they're going to, if this signals that they're going to be tougher on this stuff, then great, as long as they stick with it. And then
they never do.
They rarely seem to stick with it. But it is, dumb play. Speaking of dumb, we should mention the fact that in addition to the shaky goaltending and everything else last night, the Leafs got their first goal on a power play that they should never have had, because the officials screwed up the puck over glass rule. The simple black and white rule that everybody loves because it's impossible to screw up.
They found a way.
Even though all four officials have to have a 5-minute meeting every time it gets called, they screwed it up.
What's more annoying, the officials conference or players raising their arm to say it went over the glass?
The players raising the arm is still the worst. Like, that is my argument, is if you want to keep the rule, make it a 2-minute penalty for pointing when the rule is broken.
I'll play 4-on-4.
Coincidental minors, you would wipe it out immediately, because there is no player that can, like, the goalie at the other end of the ice is like pointing. I've never once seen the referee be like, what? Excuse me. Oh, did the puck go in? Oh, okay. Thank you for alerting me to that.
It happened last night totally in the Nashville Colorado game with like a minute to go and they were down by two, and like Colorado won the draw and a guy hammered it off the glass, just hammered it off the glass, but he missed his angle and it went off the glass and into the seats immediately. Like, nobody moved from their faceoff spots, and still the one Predators defenseman at the blue line put his arm up like, buddy, come on, man.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Two minutes. I would make that a 2-minute penalty, and I would announce it as 2 minutes for tattletaling. And it just get that. But here's the thing. And I'm not like this is well trod ground, so I'm not going to do a whole long thing on it. But
okay, I'm going to time this now.
Because my team just benefited from this rule, this gives me a window to remind everyone how stupid this rule is without somebody saying that you're just saying this because it was your team or your homer or whatever else. Okay. Like, my team just may have won a crucial season saving playoff game because of this stupid rule. It is such a stupid rule. And the last night, about, I would say maybe about 5 minutes before that power play, which, by the way, if you didn't see the game, that was one of those games where you could, the right from the opening faceoff, you could tell the refs were going to let everything go. They didn't want to call any penalties that night. Like, there was all guys were getting mugged, both teams, both ends of the ice constantly. But we had an automatic penalty because a puck accidentally got shot over the glass. And about 5 minutes before that, there was a play where I want to say it was Charlie McAvoy knocked his own net off in the defensive zone. And it was a total accident. Like he was head towards the net. He blew a tire. He wiped out. He knocked the net off. And the only reason I even remember is because I was watching the game with my son and he thought it was hilarious. Like kids love it when somebody wipes out and takes out the net.
Oh, he fell. You didn't do it on purpose.
He fell. He fell, slid into the net and, you know, bumped the net off and they put the net back on. They had a face off and everybody kept going. How stupid would it be if that play was an automatic penalty? Like, imagine an alternate universe where that play happens and immediately all five Leafs start pointing at him and go, oh, he knocked the net off. He knocked the net off. And the announcers go, oh, well, we know what has to happen here. This is, you know, it's a rule. And the color guy's like, you know, Bill, I really like this rule because it's black and white and it's written in the rule book. And it's always, you know, how stupid would that be if like a clearly accidental play like that had to be an automatic penalty just because maybe somebody could have done it intentionally? It would have been completely ridiculous. And yet that's how we treat the puck getting shot over the glass, which is the exact same type of play. It's something that is usually accidental. Sometimes it's on purpose. And yet one of them we've decided has to be a penalty every single time, no matter what. Forget the context. Forget whether it's clearly accidental. Forget all of that. Has to be the same. And the other one, we just go to the referee like, hey, if it's intentional, just call it delay a game. Otherwise, keep the game going. And everybody's fine with it.
Well,
completely ridiculous.
Well, that's a problem is that I don't know how a referee can judge whether it's intentional or not. Like sometimes the puck's just rolling and you catch it wrong and you just flip it too high. And I just say treat it like icing.
Well,
treat it
but
like
some icing. Of it is, yeah. I mean, that's the answer is treat it like, and if you treated it like icing, you wouldn't even have to worry about whether the puck hit the glass.
Yeah.
Or whether it went over the bench, like that weird exception where if you shoot it over the bench, suddenly that's like you would just say, you shoot the puck either down the ice or
out of play.
Out of play.
It's icing.
No line change, face off in your zone, and we keep going. But every time you say that, somebody goes, yeah, but then they'll do it on purpose all the time. And, you know, like you and I are about the same age. Like you remember in the 80s, the epidemic of players constantly shooting the puck over the glass before we had this rule, and the games were all 4 hours long, and everybody complained, and it was really. Right. We don't remember that because that never happened. That was never a thing. It was never a problem before they invented a rule to fix a problem that, you know, because it happened. Like every old time fan remembers like Jamie McCowan doing it once. And that's like in their mind has morphed into that it happened
McCowan.
All the time. But it didn't. It wasn't a thing that happened often. But people go, oh, yeah, as soon as you do that, they'll be flipping it. Okay. So you know what? That's the second part of the rule. If it's intentional, if the referee feels it's intentional, they can call delay a game, just like they can call delay a game when a player knocks the net off, just like they can call delay a game if a team is slow on a line change, if they think it's intentional. Just like, you know, like, you know what else?
Right.
You know what other delay a game rule rests on the referee judging intent? Shooting the puck over the glass anywhere else on the ice. Like if you're in the neutral zone and you shoot the puck over the glass, the referee can judge and say, you know what, that was intentional. You did that to stop the game. That's 2 minutes. They have that ability there. We trust them to do it there. Trust them to do it in the offensive zone. But in the defensive zone, suddenly, like, we've all got our heads in this black and white rule. Oh, you know, it's black and white. That's what I like. Like, a black and white dumb rule is still a dumb rule.
Okay, that was 6 minutes, by the way. Just wanted to.
I'm not even halfway done.
Listen, I'm gonna be real. I'll be real quick here, but
of the podcast where Sean goes for another 40 minutes while Dave goes and gets a sandwich.
Yeah, I'm just gonna go hop out and use the bathroom real quick and just come back in and put the headphones back on. And it's like, and another thing.
This is my one chance to do it because if I do this rant any other time, somebody will be like, oh, "You're just mad because some team this or that." My team just won a game because of it. This is my one window to remind everyone how utterly stupid this rule is and how ridiculous people sound when they go, well, you know, black and white, I really like this rule. It's a terrible, dumb, stupid rule. And we don't treat any of the other many things in the delay game section of the rule book this way, nor should we.
This is your I'm a Leafs fan, but moment when people do that on Twitter.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a Leafs fan, but I think it's great that this team is raising money for a charity. Like, I love when people do that one, when it's like an obviously really nice thing to do, or your fandom shouldn't matter. You know, I'm a Leafs fan, but I think it's really great that we're raising money for cancer, cancer research. What? Because a Bruins fan has it? Like, what are you, an idiot? Like, why would you say that? That's stupid. That doesn't make any sense. You should just be happy that that's happening, whether you're a Leafs fan or a Montreal fan. We're at the halfway point. Should we stop for the advertising and then come back, or do you want to?
Yeah, we've got. I think we've pretty much hit three of the series. So let's do our ad.
Yeah, let's do the ad, and we'll come right back, and we'll do more stuff. And we got some non-playoff stuff, like the Ken Hitchcock for Hall of Fame talk, because he's really nice to the media, even though he hasn't done anything in the last 12 years of his career, and some other stuff.
And the Sedins, we got to talk about them.
Yeah, we'll get to the Sedins after the break, because we know we missed that the last time, but we'll get to them and talk about where they rest in history and stuff like that, and be back in 2 seconds. All right, so we're back, and you know, we seriously will get to the Sedins before this is over. That's an absolute promise from your boys at Biscuits. But the one other, my favorite series, the series where I feel like all the games have been interesting and they've been close and they haven't been blowouts or any sort of lopsidedness, Washington, Columbus, my Caps, the team that I declared would reach the third round this year, has jumped to a 2-0 lead in both games on home ice. Found a way to lose them both. I don't know how they do it. I don't know how they can reach down deep every year and find new ways to do it, but they do. And I don't want to say the series is over because they've been so close and they've led, but like if they come back home down 3-1, like the thing that I thought was very telling, and I think you tweeted about this because it was just funny, you said it should be their logo, was after Calvert scored the winner, somebody on the Caps like just threw their stick and hit another guy in the Caps with his stick out of frustration. Like that to me, like, again, I don't want to be the psychologist on at home, but that screams like we know we can't win and we're giving up, and I don't feel like they're going to come back now because of that.
You think like if any team would have practiced their crushing loss reactions, it would be the cat. I mean, it's brutal, obviously, losing two games that way. And like to see just the reaction where, I don't know, did you see that somebody tweeted where it was like a screen grab from the post game after game one? And it was just this guy, I don't even know who it was, like standing there with a microphone with the Caps logo on it. And the closed caption was just, I don't want to jump immediately to the worst case scenario, but, and I was like, there it is. That's Washington sports right there. Right. Like as soon as that, even game one, everybody was like, yeah, here we go.
Yep.
So, I mean, you being the guy who was driving the bandwagon.
I was.
Am I like, yeah, I mean, you kind of touched on it already, but like, am I crazy that I don't think this is over and that I don't...
I mean, I think
like
it
at
is
some point, I feel like I have to figure out that this team's never going to win, but I talk myself into it every year. Not maybe to the same extent that you did, but I always feel like this, you know, this is going to be the year that all the pressure's off now. Everyone's already written them off, so...
But they still find a way to feel it, though. Like they get up by two goals, and then it becomes a one goal game, and then like they
tighten
up.
Can we agree that they're going to win game three at least to like reel some people back in? And
well,
like they're not losing in a sweep. That's too easy. There's just
That's the thing. They haven't been swept during this run where they've. Oh no, Montreal! Did Montreal sweep them back in 2010? No, it was a 5-game series.
That was seven games.
Oh yeah, what am I talking about? It just felt like a sweep because you knew they had no chance because Yaroslav Halak is the greatest goalie of all time. They'll lose in one of two ways. They'll get swept, or they will come back and lose in seven at home. But those are the two options I think at this point. I don't think they should have started Braden Holtby in game two. They should have saw the writing again. I am such a guy who does not want to be loyal to my goaltender. Never mind a backup goaltender when I have a Vezina winner on my bench. People do this all the time. like Artemi Panarin's game winner in game one looks incredible because he goes backhand, forehand, roof, right? He puts it up in the top corner. That puck shouldn't get to the top corner if your goalie is square to the guy, because there's only so many places he can shoot the puck from that spot. And Grubauer is like, his right leg is like outside the right post. I don't know what he's doing on that play. And it's not that he was bad, but that was the kind of game where you can be like, all right, we gave him a 2-goal lead. We lost a lead. We have Braden Holtby, who has been, he's like Corey Schneider, same sort of thing with the Devils series, where they gave Keith Kincaid a couple of games to not necessarily play badly, but to lose them in a sort of lopsided fashion. Let's go back to our number one. The yeah. Caps might have been better off not waiting until the third period of game two to do it, but
that just felt like such a weird, I don't know if I say panic move, but like that's just an over thing. And I know like Grubauer was better this year. Like he had the better numbers, especially down the stretch. But I mean, at some point you've got a guy who won the Vezina.
I know.
What was it, 2 years ago? And yeah, I had a bad month or two. I don't know. I mean, you want to give him a quick hook? Okay. Like, I get that. I get you're not going to say Braden Holtby's our guy for the whole series no matter what, like he maybe would have been last year. But,
yeah, coaches have this weird thing.
New Jersey, you can kind of get it because in New Jersey, first of all, Corey Schneider is a good goalie, but Corey Schneider's not, you know, he's not a Vezina guy. He's not a guy that's, you know, been one of the very best for the last few years. He's also, you know, you're the underdog there. Like maybe you figure like we're putting all our chips in. Everything's on the table. We're going to do crazy things here and we're just going to do everything we need to. I don't know. You're the Capitals. Like,
Like Keith Kincaid also went 7-0-1 down the stretch. So you can kind of get why you want to keep going with him.
Yeah.
Because I mean, not that Grubauer wasn't bad. It was bad or anything, but mm-hmm.
You were playing like de facto playoff games all the way down the stretch. So,
yeah, but they were also against like Montreal and the Islanders and the Rangers. Keith Kincaid's wins were against like Carolina. Like they were playoff wins, sort of quote unquote. But they were basically playing the playoffs against like the Buffalo Sabres in a 7-game series. So of course you're going to go 7-0 in those games. You should go 7-0 in those games. But yeah, like I liked what the Devils did. They gave him two games. They didn't do well in front of him, and they said, let's go back to Corey Schneider. We're down 2-0. What do we have to lose? The Caps. I wish they would have just pulled the trigger a little quicker, but like we've been talking, but this is now a goaltending psychology podcast now that interference has happened. So now I would have just gotten the Holtby for game two, but that's just me.
It's too early because we both agree that the Capitals could come back to this, but Barry Trotz is fired if they lose this series?
I don't agree they're coming back, just for the record. They're not going to win this series.
But they could. That we shouldn't be talking about this series as if it's already over.
No, it's over.
Yeah, it is.
It's totally over. I can't.
This is
my new tactic.
First Caps fans, the driver of the bandwagon has pulled the chute.
Seriously, by the way, the Caps. I wrote before the season started that Vegas would be terrible, like everybody else did, and like Vegas fans are still mad about that. I wrote a week and a half ago about how this is going to be the Caps' year. And the Caps are the only fan base where you can say positive things about them and they will lash out at you about it. Like, what are you doing to us? Why would you say this? It's incredible. I love it.
You can write. And that's why that's why it's one of my favorite fan bases now. Like back in like 2010, they were one of the absolute worst to deal with. But now they've been so beaten down.
They're broken.
You can write the most horrible, insulting things. Like I wrote yesterday that they hit rock bottom and kept digging, and then they ate a handful of dirt and hit themselves in the face with a shovel. And Capital fans were like, that's a great line, man. I'm going to use that. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for writing. I'm going to forward that a lot. Whereas, you know, and then meanwhile, you say like one negative thing about like literally any other fan base.
Seriously, like you say, like, oh, I think the Preds are going to sweep the Avs, and like the Avs win one game, and they're like, what's up, buddy? I thought we were going to get swept.
You got a daycare breaking out in your mentions, but Washington are just, oh, man. So, and then that's why, like,
you should find
part of me is like, I hope it ends in a sweep because just put these people out of their misery. But then there's that part of me that's like, I want it, like, no, that's too easy. Let's get weird. Like, I want to see down 3-0, win three straight to come back, and then lose game seven at home. Like, I feel like that is maybe where we're headed.
Or they come back from down 3-0, win the series, and then get swept by Pittsburgh in round two. Maybe that's the you never know. You never know how these are going to go. They find ways. They really do. Like, the sweep hasn't happened, so I want to leave open the possibility of the sweep. But yeah, you're right. They do find really theatrical, dramatic ways to do it.
Yeah. Like, I feel like last year, coming back from down 3-1 against Pittsburgh to get to the seventh game and then losing, like, that was a good twist. I feel like we got to go one better on that now.
What a team. I don't know how.
By the way, if you're listening carefully, you'll notice that in the last few minutes, I both guaranteed a Caps win and a Caps loss in game three. That's how you play the prediction game. Right there.
Oh, man. By the way, the two series that I think are kind of the same are the Devils and Tampa and the Preds and the Avalanche, where, you know, the Avs and the Devils are probably not going to win those series. And the Avs have kept it close. They've led all three games and they're down 2-1 now. And the Devils kind of got waxed a little bit in the first two games. They've kept it close, but they've had those like 4-minute stretches where the Lightning in games one and two just kind of stepped on their throats. And then game three, again, this is why I go back to why Taylor Hall should probably be the MVP, is when Taylor Hall carries the Devils, they can beat anybody. But you're asking Taylor Hall to carry in 4 out of 7 games, while Colorado's they've kept it close, kind of with more of a team sort of thing. Like, Nathan MacKinnon's been really good in that series, but he's not the only guy sort of contributing to all the points and all the goals. So I don't know. I the Devils kind of feel like they're back in it now, because it was a little fiery, like, you know, piss and vinegar kind of a game in game three. And you're like, we showed them that they can't sleepwalk past us. Like, well, they kind of did in the first two games. And then you kind of had Taylor Hall carry in game three. So I don't know about that. But those series have been a little more competitive than I thought they were going to be.
Yeah. I mean, those are, you're right. Those are pretty much, it's like the same series. The writers got lazy and just kind of.
Yeah.
Cut the 8 seed, the plucky underdog 8 seed with the MVP candidate and the backup goalie versus the number one seed that everyone just wants to see go into the second round and play the other team in their division. So they're trying to get out as quick as they can. I don't know. They've both been decent series, decent hockey. Was there anything at the end of the last night's Devils Lightning game that made you think that somebody should be suspended or somebody should be, you win it? Like, I find, like, seems like Devils fans are pretty cranky with how that all went down.
I mean, did anybody really do anything to kind of set off those things that it was? I mean, somebody wanted
Victor Hedman gave the little cup check there, but that's not something that the
it's funny. Like I've seen, like, Milan Lucic many years ago, like, tried to take the testicles off somebody on Detroit. It was,
he did it a couple times. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I thought that was way worse than what Hedman did. Like, Hedman definitely went for the giblets, but I mean, I would suspend for that. Like, I feel like, you know, you don't like, there's certain like I hate unwritten rules, but one of the unwritten rules I follow is don't hit a guy in the penis and testicles with your stick. That's my big, actually, technically that rule is written. Yeah. You shouldn't do that anyway.
I think that is in the code. I think that's one of the ones on the tablet. By the way, just not to yet again pull us back to Toronto Boston, but where on the code does licking a guy rank?
I know. I'm surprised how, like, open and, like, how cool everybody is with that. Like,
yeah, I feel like this is one of those things where, like, everyone has just decided you have to either be really mad about it or you have to think it's just hilarious and great.
I don't know, man. I'd rather get punched in the face during a hockey game. Like, how do you react to somebody? It's like in Field of Dreams when the kid winks at the pitcher and then he throws at him. Like, only, like, this is physical contact with your tongue. Like, I don't know. I want to draw the line,
like,
there.
The sort of, yeah, I don't know. Like, you know what it should be? It should be like snowing the goalie, right? It's harmless, but the only reason you're doing it is to be a dick and to try to get somebody on the other team to punch you in the face in the power play. So, you know, and they, a couple years ago, they were like, you know what? Snowing the goalie is now 2-minute penalty, and, you know, just to get people to stop doing it. It feels like there should be some room. But
it's like Sean Avery with the whole hands in the air thing. Like, once he did that once, people were like, yeah, we can't do that anymore. Like, Brad Marchand licks a guy, and everyone's like, well, it's funny. Let's let him do it. All right.
It's funny. Yeah, okay.
Sure.
Yeah, you say sure. So. All right. The other series that we have not done, well, there's two we haven't done. One, I mean, Anaheim-San Jose.
Boy. I don't know how Anaheim, like, of the 8 goals that were let up last night between Miller and Gibson, I don't feel like the goalies were really totally at fault at any point, but it's just amazing to me how every year John Gibson, again, I've done goalie psychology, I've done goalie body language, and now I'm going to do goalie lateral movement. It seems like John Gibson has like Martin Brodeur when he was 41 years old lateral movement. Like, I don't know what it is. I feel like he can't move across. And like, I get it. Like, if a guy makes a perfect pass to the post and there's a guy there, he's probably going to score most times. But it feels like John Gibson can never get over on those. And I don't know if that's just like my perception and it's not true, but every year it just seems like he can't move in the crease.
Listening to this podcast morph into a goaltending analysis. Dave's going to do the VH-RVH debate next and break down the pros and cons of each. That's
over, obviously.
But what do you even do? What do you do if you're Anaheim? Like, this is typically, this would be the sort of thing where you're like, all right, time to break it up. Time to.
That should have happened a while ago.
Direction, but I mean, you've got so many guys locked in on contracts. I mean, do you change the coach? Do you change the GM?
Yeah, they have too many guys who are 31 signed until they're 38, pretty much. Yeah. So,
like, do you just keep coming out every year and go, we're going to get 100 points and lose at some point in the first few rounds?
The Caps should look at the Ducks as like a warning, as like a cautionary tale of like what happens when you just kind of limp along and be that 100 point team that loses in the playoffs every year. Yeah. Like, maybe at some point it sucks to do it, but you might have to do it.
That was the thing about the series, because like the Sharks are also that team. Like, every year the Sharks are about 100 points, second or third of the Pacific. You look at them, go, yeah, they could do some damage, and then
yeah,
go out, you know.
They're going to lose in the second round probably now, but
yeah.
I don't know. San Jose, I'm like, to me, the first round overall has been pretty disappointing this year. A lot of blowouts, not a lot of close games, but you look at where we're headed, where it's probably going to be Winnipeg against Nashville. I mean, Minnesota won game three, but Winnipeg has been Minnesota played pretty well in game three, but we're looking at possibly Nashville, Winnipeg, Vegas, San Jose, Pittsburgh, Columbus, Pittsburgh, Washington. Doesn't matter. That'll be a good series. And then Tampa versus probably Boston. I mean, the second round is going to be awesome. The first round.
Yeah. The second round is like the main event this year.
Yeah.
Which is, and, you know, again, it's, you know, we've kind of touched on the whole playoff format thing, but this is a format that can get you some real good second round matchups. So maybe, you know, would it be better if Nashville and Winnipeg were playing in the conference final? Yeah, maybe, but we might as well enjoy it while we can. But it is like, somebody pointed this out. Like, you look at the way things are going for the Knights. They're maybe going to sweep the Kings. They're going to get a Sharks team in round two. The Pacific isn't a good division. So that's a very winnable series. They're going to get, presumably, Nashville or Winnipeg, who will have just finished beating each other's brains out for seven games. Like, I don't.
Are you talking to yourself about the Vegas winning the cup? Is that what you're doing right now?
Like, I feel like at some point, this great story that everyone loves is going to hit a tipping point where people are like, okay, that's enough. You don't need to do this the whole way. But we're not there yet. But yeah. So yeah, Minnesota, Winnipeg. Is that, what did you think of the Tyler Myers injury?
Oh, it was a total accident.
Kind of weird.
I'm surprised it was even a thing after. Like, he was clearly going down the block a shot and just lost his balance.
Never be surprised that anything is a thing.
Yeah, I'm just
playoffs. It did look a little weird, but again, like this, I saw, you know, the freeze frame with the arrows, and you know, this is, you know, the fist is hitting the knee. I didn't see it.
Yeah, it was that totally way. It was, so the thing was like watching that game, I saw that happen live, and Tyler Myers is laying next to the boards motionless for like 30 seconds. Like, I thought he went like head and neck into like an open door, and then like I saw the replay, mm-hmm. and I was like, what happened? I don't understand what happened. And then you see it and you're like,
which is,
oh, that's not great.
Which is also bad, because usually, you know, if somebody hurts a knee or whatever, they go down kind of holding it and rolling around. Like, if somebody goes down like that, you wonder if it's something that they already know what's happened.
How about the linesman? You know, how about the linesman who tore his quad and like exploded his kneecap, and he was just kind of sitting on the ice like, no, yeah, I guess I'm done for the playoffs. Like, he didn't even seem like he was in pain.
No, well, and I don't know. Are you in pain when that, or is that like one of these things where like you break your leg and you just go into shock and you don't,
it sounds
like
bad.
You look down, your kneecap is spinning around your ankle, and you're like, oh, your brain's like, I'm just going to shut down right now and make it so that you don't have to see this.
Hockey linesmen are tough. NBA referees are wussies. Please like my referees. Oh boy. All right. Well, we've hit all the playoff stuff, and we've got about like 10 minutes left here. I just want to point out that in the world of hockey media, it really, I was telling somebody this the other day. I was like, look, if you ever rise to a position in hockey where you're a coach, you're a GM, you're an AGM, wherever you are, be nice and charming all the time. Just never turn it off, no matter how bad a mood you're in, no matter how bad things are going, no matter how dumb a question is, always be nice, always answer it thoughtfully, because that's what media people remember. And they're the people that vote on stuff and can pump your tires for Hall of Fame stuff, because Ken Hitchcock, since 2006 and 2007 season, has been one of the more disappointing, underwhelming coaches that you could hire. And yet he retires, he announces his retirement this week, and it's just like, oh man, first ballot Hall of Famer. Like, really?
I think, you know what, Dave? I think you're just bitter because you and I are apparently the only two media members who never got to like sit down with Ken Hitchcock.
Oh, I have.
Over beers and talk. Okay.
Not beers, but yeah. He's great.
Apparently Ken Hitchcock just like comes over to everyone's house and just sits down for 3 hours in the back patio and talks hockey and then leaves. And
explain to me the PK box, Ken Hitchcock, and then like 4 hours later, it's like, wow, you really let me know how to guard the seams and
which is like, is funny because Ken Hitchcock, especially early in his career, had a reputation as a coach that players hated. Like, he was a guy that you hired him for 3 years because by year four, you were going to have a mutiny on your hands. And, you know, he obviously mellowed in that regard over the years. I mean, he should be in the Hall of Fame because he's the third winningest coach of all time. But the Hall of Fame is really weird about coaches. Like, they don't, they wait forever. They kind of wait till you die most of the time. There's all sorts of guys that, like,
you
would think would be in the conversation that don't even seem to get any consideration. So I don't know. Who knows? But
I don't know.
What direction do you think Dallas goes?
Oh, they're screwed. They're so screwed. Like, if
I meant as far as hiring a coach, but yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Big picture, sure.
Yeah, I don't know how they fix their issues, because if Ken Hitchcock can't come in and shore up the ship with that much talent on it for 1 year and just get you in as an eighth seed, I don't know who out there is going to. Because like Ken Hitchcock, like, again, my issue with Ken Hitchcock is that, you know, he left Philly and then coached Columbus, did nothing with Columbus, went to St. Louis. And it's weird how like all the reasons why people make fun of Bruce Boudreau, no one makes fun of Ken Hitchcock for having great regular seasons and then getting outflanked by Darryl Sutter.
Ring, right? Once,
yeah, the one cup.
Get the ring.
One cup with Dallas. Yeah, but like one cup in 20 years, man.
Yeah. One cup with Dallas, like literally in a different millennium.
Yeah. He's one of those coaches that never really adjusted to the new NHL, and people seem to not care because he wore a sweatshirt that said hockey on it. I don't get it, man. Like, I don't get our business. I don't get it at all. Dallas is, I saw that picture of Radulov and Kovalchuk. I thought Kovalchuk to the Rangers was a done deal, and now it's possibly not, but maybe they're just holding off announcing it till July 1st. I don't know.
I think that's it. He can talk to everyone, but he can't sign until July 1. Dallas feels like a situation where you want to bring in kind of a new set of eyes, somebody who maybe hasn't been like this doesn't feel like where you want to bring in the Daryl Sutter or somebody like that.
No.
Or the Barry Trotz, but I guess, yeah, we'll find out. I mean, Jim Nill's got to be like kind of the next guy on the hot seat. He maybe should be already, according to some of the Dallas fans I've talked to. So
yeah, his next coach is either going to get him 5 more years or fired in a year and a half. So no pressure. No pressure there.
One real quick, just only because we are an Ottawa Senators podcast, people may be wondering if we have any thoughts on the Eugene Melnyk town hall meetings. Unfortunately, we are the media, so we would just be lying to you with our fake news. So if you want to know how those town halls went, apparently you're supposed to call Pierre Dorion directly. Uh-huh. That's how the team wants you to just get all your news directly from them and not from the lying, notoriously tough and difficult Ottawa media.
People don't know this, but Bobby Ryan has been a member of the PHWA for like 6 years, and and he's the one that reported all that stuff about the being attached to the cross.
Don't believe the stuff you read in there. You mean the stuff that your own player told us?
The direct quotes.
Don't believe.
But like that, take it from someone who lives in the United States of America in 2018. Like Trump has made the playbook for billionaire idiots to pull one over on people.
You
just say fake news.
If somebody tells you that, that the media lies and it's all fake news, you know you're dealing with a trustworthy, reasonable person. Will not steer you wrong. So good luck with that, Sens fans.
Yeah, but
I think we covered everything. Should we do the mailbag?
Yeah, is it possible that you can do it? Because like I'm not getting any Wi-Fi here. I can't call up. I was looking at the questions upstairs in the lobby, and I can't get to them now, so I can't technically read them.
I can. Let me look down the list. Actually, where was it? There was one that I really liked I was going to jump in with. There it is. All right. Mike Kassin on Twitter would like to know, given that this is a copycat league, assuming other teams all copy whoever wins the Stanley Cup this year, for the sake of the league and the fans, what would be the best and the worst team to win the Stanley Cup?
You know what? I saw that question, and I feel like we're beyond that now, because everyone wants to get fast, and I think it's because the Penguins won two straight cups. Like, yeah, it helps to have Crosby and Malkin, whatever speed they're going. But I mean, LA and Anaheim being the lumbering doofuses that they are, getting pounded and swept by San Jose and Vegas, two teams that kind of live off of speed, is a really good thing. So I think once that happens, I mean, we're going to be left with, there's not going to be any sort of heavy team. Like, yeah, like Columbus wants to play below the goal line and stuff, but I mean, Vegas has built a potential Stanley Cup finalist out of scraps of guys who can just skate. The Devils are in the playoffs because of Taylor Hall, but they have a bunch of guys that can skate. So I think no matter what happens, like barring some miracle comeback from LA or Anaheim, I think we're in a good spot hockey-wise when it comes to how they're playing the game.
I feel like, hockey-wise, yes. As far as how the teams are built, and this is not going to go over well with my fellow countrymen up here, but I feel like the best case is Nashville, because they've been just so aggressive on the trading front as far as how they built that team and really not standing pat. And the worst case is probably Winnipeg, because that has been a team that's been almost purely draft and develop, which is smart, and they executed it beautifully. But from a fan perspective, 31 teams all trying to patiently draft and develop and not
that's
trade and
point.
Not do free agency would be ugly.
That's a good point. Yeah. So now when Nashville plays Winnipeg,
Winnipeg is in terms of on the ice, Winnipeg's amazing to watch, but it's not like a team could see, like, they're amazing because they're stacked with talent. It's not like a team would see that and go, hey, we should play that style. It's, you know, then the GM's going to say, well, you have to give me 6 years where I don't even win a playoff game and still keep my job, and I just draft and develop, and that's where we go. So
Interesting. Let's do two more. Let's do one more or two more. We'll see how long the one takes.
This seems up your alley. Kevin Maloney would like to know, when John Tavares signs with another team on July 1st, what is Garth Snow's panic move going to be?
Oh.
And how much extra panicky will it be if Tavares signs with the Rangers?
I don't think he has the ability to panic, man. I think Garth Snow is panic-free. I think he has that contract where he's untouchable and John Tavares can kind of go do whatever he wants. Like if you can miss the playoffs, not trade John Tavares at the deadline, have a billboard put up that says you should be fired, and you're not even close to losing your job. Like, I just think you're basically walking around with like a bulletproof cloak on the whole time, that you can't get taken out. You're perfectly happy. You don't care about it. You can't possibly be Garth Snow at this point and be worried about being fired. You can't.
I feel like, you're probably right, but even from a PR perspective, I feel like he has to do something. Like, how quickly does he get back on the phone to Peter Chiarelli?
That's every chance.
Has he been off the phone with Peter Chiarelli? Right. Has he maybe, like, is it one of those, like, you know when you call customer service and you're on hold for so long and you're like, you're just walking around with the phone, you're like, I'm not hanging up, I'm keeping this line. I wonder if he's got that with Peter Chiarelli.
I think,
or like every now and then Peter Chiarelli tries to call up somebody else and he's like, hello. And Garth's like, no, it's still me. Still here.
I think Garth is going to sell to everyone on, like, well, we've got all these young, talented players. We're going to watch them blossom this year and then we'll reassess. Like, I don't think they'll do anything major. I don't.
All right, one last quick one. Philip Crossman says, which playoff team is most likely to blow it all up for a scorched earth rebuild after a first round exit? Like, it should be one of Anaheim or Minnesota. Those are the two teams that would make sense, but I'm not sure either one can necessarily do it.
Yeah, like there's the Parise and Suter contracts. Yeah. Anaheim's tons of, I mean, even the Caps are at a point where they can't do it. They just gave TJ Oshie a ton of money. So first round loss, blow it up. LA? I mean, they're kind of starting to do it, but
they're getting there.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm going to say maybe Minnesota, just because blow it up can include changes as far as the GM, as far as like Minnesota feels like the one team where you could see sweeping organizational changes as a result of going out quickly in the first round, assuming they do. So
I could see Toronto doing something big if they get waxed in five.
I can see Toronto doing something stupid.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
They decide to have to trade like William Nylander because I hope they don't, but we don't even know who the GM is going to be in Toronto. So that remains to be seen. But
yeah. Well, we've hit the 11 o'clock hour. So that means we have to say goodbye because there's other things to be done in the world of Vice Sports and the lives of Dave and Sean. So thanks for listening. We're pretty sure, I'll say I'm 100% sure we'll be back at the usual time next week just because of how the schedule breaks. Next week, Tuesday and Wednesday is where all the game sevens are scheduled, and obviously every series won't go seven. So there's no real like great time to do it next week where we can set you up for round two and laugh at round one perfectly. So I think we'll be back here Tuesday at the usual time. Does that work for you?
Yeah, that sounds about right. And the Toronto-Boston series will probably be over by then, and I'll be angry I'll still be angry. It doesn't matter one way or another at all.
Here's why the puck over the glass rule is great, actually.
It's fantastic.
Yeah. All right, well, read us, listen to us, rate us, and we'll be back here in 7 days. We'll do it all over again, all right? See ya.
Sounds good.
See you, everybody.